Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazzy Man Brain. I'm joined, as always, by my brother. This time, I'm going to Miami. Welcome to Miami. You back in your hometown, Nando?
Back in the hometown, you know, making sure everything's all right, making sure everyone's behaving, you know. You got to come back every once in a while and remind people what's what, you know?
That's right. That's right. You got to let them know you haven't become too soft and you moved to the West Coast. Well, no. Today's show, man, it's crazy. Like yesterday, I was actually in a work text thread about something, and somebody made a joke about, oh man, I thought you wanted to have Henry Kissinger on this podcast. And that was me finding out that Henry Kissinger had died. Of course, American statesman from, you know, Nixon administration, quite infamously, to, you know, being an advisor to all kinds of presidents and other, you know, kings and all kinds of foreign leaders, you know, that ran the gamut. And he finally passed away yesterday at the age of 100 years old. Nando, I first became aware of Henry Kissinger and his legacy. I read this book on the, which I've mentioned on here a bunch of times, called Legacy of Ashes. It's a history of the CIA written by a dude named Timothy Weiner. And in the book, Weiner explains the role that Kissinger played when we carpet bombed Cambodia and Laos for basically no reason.
Yeah.
Whatsoever. It was his idea. He advised Nixon to carpet bomb those countries. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people died off of this. And that's, you know, we don't even know the type of people who were maimed and injured and forever affected by this bombing campaign. And I was like, God damn, that was sort of my introduction. Reading that book was my introduction to the idea that, you know, generally speaking, the U.S. is fucking shit up abroad. When we're overturning democratically elected governments, even when we're not doing that, we're basically propping up strongman authoritarian regimes. Like, we are generally doing the most fucked up shit abroad in our names. The government is doing that shit in our names. And Henry Kissinger, man, he's got quite the resume in that regard, Nando.
Yeah, I mean, the war in Vietnam and in kind of greater Indochina, because really the war was extended personally by Henry Kissinger into Cambodia. The war also was fought in many ways in Laos as well, like the three neighboring countries. That war in Indochina, which lasted basically from the middle 1950s to the mid 1970s, about 20 years, in which the United States involvement was from the beginning to the end, but really was ramped up through the 1960s and early 70s. You know, you've seen all the movies. When you tell people that on the low end, we probably killed 1.5 million people, on the high end, maybe closer to 4 million people in those three countries, you know, and
it's unfathomable, dude.
It's unfathomable, dude. And especially because the pretense for the war was so thin, in the sense that it's like Vietnam, like who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like this tiny.
Well, Lando is containment. Cause if Vietnam becomes communist, New Mexico's next. Yeah. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. I mean, really just absolutely deranged shit because, you know, you know, just these three poor countries on the other side of the world that have a very questionable strategic importance to anything. And just this fanatical kind of push to contain the spread of communism killed, you know, maybe 3 million people. I mean, they don't really know. They'll never really know. But, you know, most historical estimates place it at somewhere between like 1.5 and 3.5 million people, which even on the low end would be just an incredible amount of death. And Kissinger was not one of the, I wouldn't say one of the architects of it, because the war.
The Cold War started in 1946, from 45. Actually, some people would say the Cold War started even before we finished off the Nazis and the Japanese army. Like, they had already started being like, yo, we got to take the Soviets out.
Yeah. But the strange thing about Kissinger, I mean, he obviously, his role in expanding specifically the war into Cambodia secretly, which is like, I think, an important part of it. Like, it was done in secret for a very long time.
And not to interrupt, Nando, I think nowadays people sort of take for granted that most of the wars we're fighting are happening in secret. So we have troops in places like Somalia. For instance, right? Like straight up fighting. There's American, it's probably like private mercenary armies, but whatever. On the behalf of the United States fighting in Somalia, that is not going to get coverage. That's not going to get coverage on the New York Times every day. No. It's not going to get coverage on CNN every day. Like nobody's talking about it. Like the way that we did, say, when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, or, you know, the way it was out here during Vietnam, World War II, even the Korean War, et cetera. I think nowadays people take it for granted that these wars are happening in secret, or not secret, just not in happening in our faces in terms of the coverage of it. But back in 1969, that was not the fucking case. Like, you were, our country wasn't supposed to be dropping massive amounts of bombs on people and not getting approval from Congress and not letting the American people weigh in and not like taking the temperature of the country. These fools just was like, no, we're just gonna do this.
Yeah, and the thing, but the strange thing about Kissinger, I mean, again, like his personal role in administering the awful things that the U.S. Empire did, obviously Cambodia. I mean, a really egregious one is Chile. You know, basically orchestrating the coup against
the coup
against Allende, killing Allende and killing the head of the Chilean army.
Period.
Very crazy. You know. Democratically elected president of a democratic country. You know?
Of a democratic country, so that they could do what, guys? So some companies could come in and sell whatever they wanted to do. Privatize every single sector of that economy so that they could come in and just be like, oh, like there's companies. Let's completely destabilize this country so that we can have unfettered capitalism. Yeah. It'll be sick. that's literally it. It's like the point of it is that so a few people can start companies in there, privatizing some of their public sector. Yeah. Like it's mind numbing when you think about it.
Yeah. And so, but the strange thing about Kissinger, again, is that Kissinger did all that and became a celebrity, like a bona fide celebrity. Kissinger was on talk shows like The Carson Show. He was frequently a guest of Robert Evans, who was the most famous producer in Hollywood at the time. He produced The Godfather and Chinatown, and he's a kind of a legendary producer and had like a legendary house in Beverly Hills where all the actresses and actors and glitterati would hang out. And Kissinger was just one of the people hanging about. Yeah. And, you know, he became this kind of famous person for being a essentially diplomat for the United States. It's very strange and kind of unprecedented career in that sense. I mean, there's plenty of awful people that have done fucking awful things on behalf of the U.S. empire, but he's right. The only one who was able to do it in a way that made him a celebrity, not just amongst kind of the Republican Party, which is the party that he served famously as Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, something that had never been done for Richard Nixon. Like Nixon was,
he worked for Richard Nixon. He's, oh my God,
hated, bro, by like liberals.
And, he was, you know, Trump. He was the Trump to liberals of that day.
Yeah,
he Watergate, was seen as a complete and utter monster. But you know, and we were talking about this on our text thread, man. I honestly think if you're like an Ivy League egghead with any level of charisma, you're going to do well amongst that set because people are going to take you seriously as an intellectual. And it's like, oh my God, this guy's like vaguely interesting and cool. Because there are obviously a bunch of people come out of those Ivy League schools, right? Come out of these, you know, stuff like the Rand Corporation and all of these like think tanky sort of things, which Kissinger is an animal of those, you know, circles. But a lot of these dudes is Poindexters. Yeah. You know, a lot of these dudes, they wouldn't be able to hold their own in the setting of big shot Hollywood producers, actresses, and actors. Like, they just wouldn't fit in. Yeah. And so to have those credentials and just be, have social skills.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
He was a legendary ladies man. I mean, look at a picture of Henry Kissinger. He was not a handsome dude, even when he was young. No. I mean, he was not. And he had a weird accent. You know, he was a weird German accent. And, and like, he wasn't a hot dude, but he was swimming in chicks, you know, outside, like in the 1970s. It was like, you know, he had the famous line, you know, someone asked him like how he did it, you know, like how he managed to like sleep with so many models and actresses when he was just this kind of nerdy diplomat who was not very handsome or, you know, or suave in any way. And he was just like, he just said, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. And he used that kind of charm and swag, for lack of a better term, to really enamor like everyone in elite circles in the United States. I mean, this dude, like, there's that famous moment where Hillary Clinton, who had also been Secretary of State under Barack Obama, said that she frequently called him for advice. I mean, again, like, this is the guy that was the Nixon guy. Like, he was on the other team, so to speak. But like, liberals loved him. This guy was on the, people forget, Henry Kissinger was on the board of Theranos.
Of course.
Like, he was on corporate
board. Got really fucking rich.
Yeah.
Throughout his life.
It was like, if you had a corporate board and you wanted some guy to give you prestige and gravitas, you throw Henry Kissinger in there, pay him a couple million dollars. And he really has an unprecedented career, I would say, as probably the most famous diplomat in American history, someone who wasn't, you know, who never became president himself. And it's just so perfect, and a certain perfect indictment on everything in our society and the U.S. empire, that this like craven fucking monster is so revered and celebrated basically everywhere at every institutional level in elite circles in America. I mean, it's just he is the instrument of you know, he is the blunt force of the tip of the spear of the empire, and that's what he did his whole life.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging, It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like,
ah, whatever. Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
So just for some background for people to understand the sort of barbarism of Henry Kissinger's career, right? So he's an advisor to the Rockefeller campaign. You know, that was Richard Nixon's rival in the Republican Party. Because again, in 2023, there's kind of like even a Mitt Romney, you can't even really call a quote unquote Rockefeller Republican. Like, these people don't exist. These sort of country club, you know, vaguely socially liberal Republicans who are just about just capitalism. But, you know, like, we don't want like hayseeds and shit in charge of it. We want people with some polish, capitalism with some polish, right? Yeah. That's essentially the Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party. Obviously, Nixon defeats that guy in the Republican primary, and Kissinger, because he's got friends in the Democratic Party too, because that's in a lot of ways his natural cohort, the liberal elites of the Democratic Party. He finds out that essentially the Johnson campaign, I mean, not the Johnson campaign, the Johnson administration is about to figure out a way to make a peace with Hanoi, the Viet Cong, my man Ho Chi Minh, and basically bring an end to the war. And he knows that this information is valuable, and he realizes that he's no longer going to be able to be in the seat of power. You know, so he's like, yo, I don't have any common cause with Richard Nixon, but I should try to curry favor with that guy. Yeah. And he tells Richard Nixon about the peace that they're trying to achieve in Vietnam and basically end the war. And that would end Richard Nixon's juice. because he's talking about he's going to be the one to bring about peace. It's going to be him, and this is part of his whole campaign and part of his whole, you know, his pitch to the American people.
If Lyndon Johnson ended the war, it would really shore up. I mean, the biggest problem for Lyndon Johnson in re-election is that young people hated the fucking war and young people vote Democrat. And like, it's a similar thing that's happening with Biden and Israel-Palestine. Like, it would affect Biden more than it would affect a Republican president, because the Democratic base is, you know, a huge part of it is young people, and young people are like, every polling shows like 80% like horrified by what's happening in Israel-Palestine. So,
right.
Yeah.
And so he gets this information to Nixon, and they find a way to absolutely sabotage it. Of course, Nixon gets elected, and he has no leverage. He can't bring these people to the table. And so what they devise, what they come up with, Kissinger and Nixon, is that they would come up with what they call the crazy man strategy. They would try to essentially scare the Viet Cong and Hanoi into surrender. Get them to think that Richard Nixon is he's insane, so we have to come to the table. How do they prove that Richard Nixon is insane, Nando? They bomb the shit out of the surrounding countries of Vietnam.
Yeah.
Amazing, dude. Like, they sabotaged a peace accord. And I think the war went on for another 5 years or so after that. Think about the amount of people who died. And just so that Henry Kissinger could have a seat at the table in Richard Nixon's White House. Just think about that. Think about that. Yeah. But when you say his
hundreds of thousands,
hundreds of thousands of people probably died, that hundreds and thousands of more maimed and fucked up behind it. And so when you say that quote, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac, if you read anything about his career in the State Department, a lot of the neocons hated him because to their mind, he wasn't a true believer.
No.
You know, doing shit like, he's a cynic, exactly. He's not an ideologue, like doing shit like detente with quote unquote communist China to the neocons is like, this is fucking crazy. We can't find common cause with the fucking commies in China. But obviously Kissinger understood, it's just like, no, this is just, power is what power does. It doesn't matter who we're establishing our power with. Whoever's helping us expand our power and our reach is our friends. It doesn't matter whether they're commie or fucking capitalist. It doesn't matter. And so that was like his whole thing. It's just like he understood, like, being in a position of influence and power was more important than any ideology, obviously.
I want to read Larry Summers' tweet, Lawrence Larry Summers, who's almost like, he's the closest thing to a Kissinger equivalent in the kind of economics field. He's not the same, but it's the same in the sense that he's like, you know, he was Secretary of Treasury a couple times under, you know, worked for Obama, worked for Clinton.
He's a piece of shit. I'm not afraid to say it.
No, he's an absolute fucking piece of shit monster. But, you know, game recognized game. So he writes.
Yes.
I will greatly miss Henry Kissinger. He was always extraordinarily generous towards me, an undiplomatic economist. His combination of intellectual brilliance, intense curiosity, and human shrewdness is not something I ever expect to ever again encounter. For 47 years after leaving office, Henry Kissinger stayed at the center of global events. That must be a record. In my last conversation with him a few weeks ago, he was totally engaged around the many threats facing Israel and also very worried about the many threats to global order. RIP, my friend.
Global order.
I know, but like, there's this reputation that Kissinger was able to cultivate amongst these people, that he was this kind of intellectual powerhouse, you know, like a titan of you know, like he had the chessboard, you know, like he was like the best risk player ever, you know, he had the little chessboard, he's moving things around, and you know, that he was like this intellectual titan. And I always, like, even if that were true, you know, which I don't think it is, like, I mean, these people, like, not like an actual intellectual, you know what I mean? Like, he's not an actual kind of someone who
doesn't have actual ideas.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Even if that were true, I mean, the older I get, the more and more I feel like, just like, intelligence is overrated, and intelligence absent like a kind of, you know, ethics or morals is actually like,
yeah, but in service of what was this intellectual
of Henry Kissinger.
In service of, like,
of Henry Kissinger.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. He never did anything for anybody. Like, nobody's life was made materially better by an idea that Henry Kissinger came up with, besides the people in his freaking family, obviously. But, like, they'll be rich forever for generations. But, like, Henry Kissinger, give me a break. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to hear him say, oh, the plight of Israel is on his mind. Because if you, again, if you read the accounts of Henry Kissinger, he was essentially the Jewish version of an Uncle Tom. Freaking Richard Nixon was virulently, virulently anti-Semitic, routinely. And this is on tape.
Yeah, he hated Jews.
This is on tape. He's talking shit about Jews to Henry Kissinger's face. Dude, like, virulently hated the Jews, you know, and that meant nothing to Henry Kissinger. He was known, like, when he was making his diplomatic missions, he would try not to have too many Jewish people in his entourage because he understood that, like, certain people would be put off by the idea that Henry Kissinger had a lot of Jewish people in his circumference and his circle. You know, like, this dude was such a, like, yeah, I don't know what you call, my Jewish homies got to tell me what a Jewish Uncle Tom is.
Self-hating Jew.
Self-hating Jew, boom. That was Henry Kissinger. So to hear him,
he has that famous quote. He has a famous quote at some point. Let me see if I can find it. He said, if it had not been, this is a quote from Henry Kissinger, if it had not been for the accident of my birth, I would have been an anti-Semite.
what a sick individual. But yeah, man, we just wanted to give you guys a sort of a real talk about Henry Kissinger's history, man, and his resume. Because again, if you turn on MSNBC, CNN, open up the New York Times, his New York Times open is just going to be flowery. And they're going to say, you know, they're going to use euphemisms like, you know, he had to make difficult decisions or controversial, blah, blah, blah. They're not going to just say, like, this guy is essentially a mass murderer.
Yeah.
There's just no two ways about it. They're not going to put it that way. But that's his history. That's his legacy. And yeah, we figured we would share that with you all today. You know, of course, Hillary Clinton bragging about being down with him. Barack Obama, you know, sending him autograph pics like, oh, you're the man, Kissinger. We love you.
I mean, that was that epic moment in the Bernie Hillary debate when Hillary was like, I call Henry Kissinger for advice all the time. And he's my friend. I call him a friend and he's like, and Bernie was like, Henry Kissinger is not my friend. I do not call him for advice.
I remember that. I remember that. But like Hillary Clinton's lack of, she's been like so entrenched in elite circles for so long. She couldn't even fathom that it was a bad look.
Yeah,
to she be was like, well, so of course, thirsty to be friends with Henry Kissinger.
People are going
to
be thinking it's dope, you know? Like,
like, it's Henry Kissinger. Like, what? Like, he's the shit. Are you kidding me? It's like if I was telling people I was homies with Stephen A. Smith. You know what I mean? Like, duh, that's something to brag about. What are you talking about? He's the fucking, he's the OG. He's the man. Yeah. He's the biggest thing going in my fucking industry. Are you shitting me? You know, I worked at the State Department. Of course I'm friends with Henry Kissinger. It's just so obvious, the blatant just cluelessness of these people. Anyway, man, that's our show today. I would encourage you guys to go read. My man Spencer Ackerman wrote an obituary in Rolling Stone on Henry Kissinger. It's nice and lengthy and very detailed and just chef's kiss. He takes piss out of Henry Kissinger. Go read that, man. If you're going to read any Kissinger obit, go read Spencer Ackerman and Rolling Stone. Shouts to my man Nando Vila. Shouts to John Gervais on the ones and threes. We will see you guys again next week. Peace.
Later.